In the book titled Enough, author John C. Bogle describes character as honor, humility, stewardship, courage, and one more important thing, enough. He tells the story of author Kurt Vonnegut at a party with fellow legendary author Joseph Heller of Catch-22 fame. Vonnegut says with a smile that the host of the evening, a multi-billionaire hedge fund manager, made more in a single day than Heller made from his blockbuster novel Catch-22. Heller then said he had something the host didn't have. Enough. I'm Jabulani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, Dr. Bruce Leach joins us for a conversation about greed. We'll look at the political, social, and personal implications of greed, and get this, there's a cure for it. Join us today on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. How much is enough is one of the most pertinent questions of our time, and all time, really. From the deficit spending and the financial borrowing to consumption to the ambitious goal to create wealth, capture power and prestige, how much is enough? And even more basic regarding those last two pieces of golden fried fish and piping hot pizza, how much is enough? Greed is what I'm talking about. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabulani LaFall. Greed is one of the seven deadly sins that Dr. Bruce Leach, psychologist and professor of family medicine at KU and frequent guest on Central Standard, is here to discuss. During Dr. Leach's segments, we sometimes take universal concepts, sometimes paring them down to the individual vantage point and process, and asking you, the audience, what you think as well. Welcome to the show, Dr. Leach.
Thank you. Good morning.
What is greed?
Well, there are many perspectives on greed, sociological, political, historical, economic. As a psychologist, I'm interested in the interpersonal, which is people between people back and forth, relationships, and the intrapersonal aspects of greed, what goes on within a human being. So that said, greed is excess desire for wealth, material possessions, power, status, fame, popularity, praise, the list goes on and on, but also the excess desire for gratification, satisfaction. It's an insatiable appetite.
A major characteristic of narcissism. Let's talk about the intrapersonal, how it starts in the intrapersonal relationship with your sort of external relationship to what defines you in the outer world and what makes you greedy. Who's greedy?
Well, you know, everybody's greedy at times. I think it's part of the human condition. When they demand more than their share or more than they need, they're greedy. When people hoard, they're greedy. When they have enough and they hold on to it and don't share. And when people ask more of other people than they themselves are willing to give. When politicians are more concerned about being reelected than the good of the people who they serve, they're greedy. When corporate executives are more concerned about their own salaries than the good of their companies, employees, or investors, they're greedy. And when people don't pay for their fair share of taxes, they're greedy. When people take advantage of government benefits,
now, that, you just covered a lot.
Is that a lot?
That is a lot.
Okay.
And our show subjects are sometimes extremely appropriate for the tenor of the times. You kind of just covered where greed fits in today and where the perceptions of greed fits in today. But let's pare down a little bit to our social interactions. Speaking with social media, is it greed to have 1,000 Facebook friends? Do we really need 1,000 Facebook friends?
I actually really contemplated that when I was thinking about what we would talk about today. There are so many people with that many friends that I think I'd probably lose friends if I answered that honestly. Yeah, maybe that's a little greedy. It's way more than enough, I would say.
But it shows status, as in the popular status comments. Your status comments, your status, you're giving your status to your friends, and you want more friends to share that with, sort of possessions, collections.
Well, I didn't really expect to talk about Facebook. What a great example, though, of what I'm thinking here. When I see somebody who is materially greedy, I lose a little bit of trust for them. And when somebody invites me to be a Facebook friend, because I do partake at times, if I see that they have 4,000 friends, whatever it is, when I see that they have hundreds and hundreds of friends, I realize that I'm probably really not that important to him.
Well, you know, Dr. Lee's Facebook is actually a great springboard for the conversation of greed. And speaking of Facebook, without being taught, a toddler will snatch something from you right out of your hand. Is this a primal urge? Is greed a primal urge? Are we greedy from way back?
I have been really fascinated with morality, the concept of morality. And one of the most famous psychologists who's ever lived is a guy named Lawrence Kohlberg. And he studied morality, moral development. He talked about stages of moral development. And you said, is this something that's natural or are we wired? He claims there are six stages. It's a controversial concept, but these are further divided into pre-conventional, conventional, and post-conventional. Now, those big words, the common sense words, are more interesting.
Well, distill that for us, if you
Yeah, should. Happy to do it. When we're little, we're pretty self-centered. You know, we want to be fed.
But where do we get that?
I do not know. Evolutionary biology, probably.
Mine. That's what
it's
they
mine.
Do.
That's right.
Is that greedy?
Well, you spend 9 months getting every single thing you need. If if your mom's pregnancy goes well, you spend 9 months getting everything you need, and it shouldn't surprise any of us that self-interest is primary.
Speaking of self-interest, as we grow up and as we get out of that toddler stage, some of us at least, most people associate greed specifically with money or financial matters, especially as it dominates our national consciousness and lexicon right now. Why do people always first lump greed into money?
Oh, I think it's really apparent. When somebody has way more than they need, it's apparent. And I also think that because of limitations of all resources, ultimately, I think that many people feel envious when they see somebody that has what appears to be everything. So we are more conscious, I think, of material things because they're visible. But you know, people also take note when somebody eats in a greedy fashion or the results of overeating are obvious. People take note when some of the more behavioral greedy processes kick in, over drinking, smoking, those kinds
of
things.
Well, it's a semantic discussion that sort of comes up when you're defining greed. How do you look at someone and decide that this is greed or that this is amorous or, you know, how is greed defined? Isn't it very subjective?
Well, it is extremely subjective. I had a good talk with a friend yesterday who said that one person's greed is another person's coping strategy. I've actually had a few people say that to me. Like I said, it's very subjective. And I look for a willingness to compromise. People who don't compromise are, I tend to believe, they're greedy. People who chase the high they once achieved from acquisitions or success, they can't get enough of it. People who seem more interested in taking care of themselves than they are in taking care of the world around them.
Now let's break down some of the subsets of greed, because along with all sociological and psychological conditioning, relativism is sort of coming into play there. Isn't greed fundamentally the basis of capitalism or the free market economy, social Darwinism, and all these manifest destiny, all that sort of thing?
Basic economic theory would claim that the first chocolate banana cream sundae you eat is the best one, and then when you get another one, when you get your second sundae at the ice cream store, it's not nearly as desirable or as wonderful or fun.
So the old law of diminishing returns.
The law of diminishing returns. As we get more, it is less rewarding. It's an interesting phenomenon. So greed is counterintuitive if you believe in the law of diminishing returns.
As Sade would say, it's never as good as the first time. We're talking to Dr. Bruce Lease, psychologist and professor of family medicine at KU, is here live with me, your host, Jabalani LaFall. We're talking about greed, but yet I still want to talk more about its origins, and I bet you do too, Kansas City. When have you encountered greed, Kansas City? whether it was your own, can you admit it was your own, or was it somebody else's? And what did it look like, and what did you do to address it? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. And shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org as well. We're greedy for what you think about greed. We have an appetite for discussion today. Dr. Lease, where does the instinct to level the accusation of greed come from? And why do we so often point it outwards and not apply it to ourselves?
Well, I believe that survival instincts are operating in us all the time. I think from the moment we come out of the womb, our goal is to survive and to make sure we have a future. I think that the more what I called earlier post-conventional, the things that we think of as ethical principles and conscience, those things are learned. I think that greed is natural, that we take care of ourselves. And I think that having a conscience and mutual respect for others and the world, I think that's something that we learn well, or in some unfortunate cases, people don't learn. Concern about the greatest good for the greatest number of people is something that doesn't come naturally to most people.
It doesn't come naturally psychologically, and then it's exacerbated by social conditioning as well. So then where do you go from there?
Well, if by that you mean how does one learn to be oriented towards the good of all? Is that the question?
I'm going there as well, but I'm also talking about, you know, beginning with the definition of it, greed, in the context of a social experiment.
When people are self-reflective, they can identify what their motives are, and to the extent that your motive is to serve yourself, and to the extent that your motive is to get more and more, that's greed. And those rare individuals who tend to be greedy, who decide that they want to nurture the world and take care of the world, to the extent that they want to learn that, there are a lot of tasks ahead. I would include the pursuit of humility, the pursuit of generosity, the pursuit of all of those kind of pro-social positive activities and processes.
But doesn't that go with the sort of Nash economic theory or Adam Smith economic theory of what's good for the individual, what the individual pursues as self-improvement can equal improvement for the greater community? Where does greed play into that?
Well, that reminds me that greed isn't all bad. Even the greediest person on the planet still employs people who, not for greed but for survival, count on what they produce. So that certainly is a consideration, that greed doesn't produce all bad.
Today's subject is greed with Dr. Bruce Lease, psychologist and professor of family medicine at KU. We're asking you what you think greed is and how it applies to your life. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or holler at us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're greedy for that discussion. Lynn, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We're greedy for what you want to talk about.
Well, I just wanted to say that I've been married to my husband for 10 years now, and I see greed only one time, like on one occasion over and over, and it's when he doesn't share his food when we go out to eat.
That's so
wow.
Interesting.
Can we go into that? Can we go into that in the context of Lynn's relationship with her husband?
Well,
he's a wonderful man. He shares everything else, but when we go out for food, he, like, for instance, he loves chicken tikka masala at an Indian restaurant, and he will make sure that I order that same exact dish because he does not want to share his.
I do too, Lynn, and I'd be very averse in sharing the tikka masala, especially if it has the yogurt and the orange and the peppers in it. It's delicious. It's delicious. Why don't you let Dr. Lease address this greed?
I am curious about what his explanation is. I mean, it seems like the most obvious question, so I'll ask it.
Lynn?
I don't know. He usually says that he likes it so much that he wants to eat all of it.
And what are his typical eating habits? I have to ask that, too.
He's usually a very moderate eater. He's not overweight or anything, and he usually shares everything else. But when it comes to, like, you know, food in front of him, there's this natural instinct to not want to share food. And eating family style is not a big thing with him. He does not like to eat family style.
Lynn, I have a question for you that Dr. Booth, at least you can chime in on. Why does it bother you?
I don't know. I guess maybe coming from a family where we did eat family style quite a bit, and, you know, you always want to try everybody else's food at the table, it was, I guess, important for me to share food.
Have you shared that with your husband?
Yes, I've told him.
And what did he say?
I think he kind of just chuckles. And I think we're from different backgrounds, and so he just chuckles a bit. I mean, he's a very generous person and a very kind-hearted person. It's just, I think it's just a quirk of his, I suppose.
Thank you, Lynn, for sharing with us. Dr. Lees, Lynn's husband doesn't agree that he's greedy. So let's get back into that subjectivity discussion. She's leveling that accusation about the chicken tikka masala. Well, and he's like,
What I like about this is that I made the statement earlier that all people are greedy at times and that that's a normal part of human development. And I like hearing that even generous, good-natured people are greedy sometimes because it supports that idea. And I think to be flawed and imperfect is to be human, and to be human is to be flawed and imperfect. And I am delighted to hear that after 10 years, that's your main concern about him. And I hope it never, ever, ever gets worse than that.
Right. If it's about tikka masala, you're actually on point. Greg in Lawrence, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. My example is something that people in Lawrence, in a large part of Kansas, and I don't know how many other states, are going to be seeing in their mailbox every month when they get their electric bill. And I saw that Westar Energy was just forced to give David Wittig a $36 million settlement. I don't know how familiar you are with his case. He was CEO of Westar, and he was convicted of looting the company. And then it was eventually overturned when basically the laws that he was convicted under, they were ruled that they didn't apply to corporations. And
so basically think David Whiting and the CEO is greedy. Is that what you're saying?
Well, and yeah, I mean, he was the whole issue was because of all the money that he took from the corporation in the first place. And then just because there was a problem in the law, I mean, he still did what he did. But there was a problem in the law, and he came back to Westar and demanded that they pay for all his defense costs for all of the trial. Plus, that was, I think, about $3 million. And then a huge settlement on top of that for being dismissed from his position early.
So is your point that the CEO is greedy, and what's wrong with that? Dr. Lees, you want to jump in on this?
Well, my response to this may or may not surprise you. I see a lot of pain and suffering, and there are a lot of things that I see in my practice and in my life that should be shocking, and they don't shock me. I will tell you straight out that I had to read that article multiple times because my jaw dropped so far that I just couldn't believe I was reading that. So I don't know what that tells you, except that my reaction to reading that was shock and awe and surprise. Does that tell you something?
Yeah.
So that, I didn't know what to make of that. So.
Greg, thanks for sharing your thoughts on that. Now, this doesn't have much to do about the CEO, but it does have to do with the larger argument about defining greed. Tyler writes in about our earlier caller. It says the caller sounds like the greedy one because she feels entitled to others' food. Now, let's talk about that in a larger context. About perceptions of greed. basically, what does that mean when you feel entitled to someone else's money or food? How do you just label them greedy?
Well, I guess we'll look at everyone's perspective on this thing. I have a little different perspective on it.
Then give us your perspective.
Thanks. I understood that our caller earlier, Lynn, was raised in an environment where a lot of sharing went on at home when it came to eating. Meals are an incredible opportunity for people to share and to practice pro-social behavior. You know, a lot has been said about what's happened because of America's habit of going to restaurants instead of eating around the dinner table. I believe that I smile at what the writer says about Lynn and entitlement. Sitting with people you care about and sharing is a very good practice, and missing that is no crime. And working through that is good for a couple that's already healthy and happy. And talking about it maybe in the context of greed is a good opportunity for them to share ideas. But if you want to teach kids how to not be greedy, sit around the dinner table with them and model generosity, model kindness, model warmth, model all those things. And boy, if anyone's going to get spoiled, I think they should get spoiled on that kind of pro-social behavior.
We're going to go to Bill. Bill, you're on Central Standard.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Great,
good morning.
Thank you.
Greed.
I wanted to talk about, I'm a job creator, been a job creator in Kansas City for at least 15 years, and I see myself as being greedy in some ways, very greedy, and actually a lot of my employees and my managers and even my stockholders like that in me. They say, you know, Bill, you want more and more and more. Not just for yourself, but you want it for the board. You want it for the employees. You want to give them more raises. You want them to own more things. So you were describing earlier about sort of a communitarian person and non-communitarian person. So one of my two or three heroes locally is Lamar Hunt, one of them, Ewing Kaufman. But then also Warren Buffett, you know, who basically took all of his money and convinced a bunch of billionaires called the living under the... If you go to www.livingpledge.com, you can see the list of all the billionaires, about 60, 70 of them. I think I was trying to convince all 300 or 400 of them to give away 80, 90% of their wealth because he's convinced them that what got them all this money is not working for them personally, and so they should give it away. So I look at greed not necessarily bad. You're describing it more in a, you know, somebody who is a communitarian person around the dinner table or not. I look at it more as more in an Americana, because if you look at America, 2% of the population in the world versus the rest of the world where, you know, I was born in Asia and I come here, one of the reasons that attracted me to the United States was this idea of individualism. Not marriage institute, not government, not anything. It was more about, you know, how, you know, individually I can go to the United States and I can make something of myself and make something of everybody that works with me and get them to that level. So greed to me works in a positive way. Now, Bernie Madoff is a different kind of a greedy person versus a Warren Buffett. So I like my people in food, like the Westar caller, the guy called by Westar. Don't just chuck these people aside because they're the job creators. I know that's a bad word politically speaking today, but these people really do take a lot of risk, like me, to create jobs, and they are a little bit greedy. And actually, you know, I mean, driving a nice Porsche to work and making sure your employees have nice cars and food in their refrigerator is not a bad idea.
Bill, you're in the Porsche right now? You're in the Porsche right now, Bill?
I'm driving the Jaguar right now.
Oh, you're driving the Jag, not the Porsche. You left the Porsche at home?
I used to own a Porsche. I switched to Jag. I don't like Porsches.
Bill, you're killing them out there. Thank you for your thoughts. Dr. Bruce Lee, you want to chime in on the greed is good in the business world, profit-driven greed, job creation. Greed is good for that.
Yeah, I really do appreciate Bill's call. One of the things I want to do in response is to distinguish between greed and industriousness or drive. as somebody who works more hours a week than I want to admit, and for somebody who collects fees for my services and owns a retail business, I would be a hypocrite to say that being driven to create or being industrious is a bad thing. I do not believe it's a bad thing. I do believe that we all have to look in the mirror each day, and nobody has to ask themselves, what am I doing here? What is my purpose for being on Earth? But I would hope that people do that at some point in their lives, that they say to themselves, who am I and what do I do that matters? So one of the most generous people on the planet is Bill Gates. He is also one of the most industrious and driven people. I could leave the capitalist system if I didn't like it, but I think there's a lot of greatness to it, and I think that that it's possible to do good, create jobs, be industrious, be driven, make a good salary, employ a lot of people, have moments of greedy, and that does not detract from who you are as a person.
And there are other sides of that argument. The basis of the antitrust suit against Microsoft in the late 90s, early millennium was about greed with the Internet Explorer browser and them crowding out all the other software people. So, again, it's a very subjective thing from a different perspective in a profit-driven environment. So where does greed come from on a psychological and clinical level?
Well, greed comes from a number of things. True greed, let's redefine it. And it's when enough is never enough for somebody. It's when they don't care as much about the world, the planet, other people, as they do about their own acquisitions. Again, it is not industriousness or having drive. So greed, which is selfishness and self-serving behaviors, comes from, to a large degree, insecurity and fear. Fear of failure, fear of loss, fear of emptiness, fear of loneliness. I would say that somebody who is industrious and driven but has close intimate relationships probably doesn't have a big giant problem. What happens that's unfortunate with greed is that people put acquisitions ahead of relationships and ahead of other people. And to a large extent, people become workaholics because they fear intimate relationships. If I am productive at work and I'm making billions of dollars, I must be a good guy is the thought behind it.
Exactly. And I would like to definitely get into the aspects of how greed tapers in the relationships and from our larger perspective. Dr. Bruce Lees is a psychologist and professor of family medicine at KU. He's here live talking about greed, but somehow I still want to know more about greed. I'm greedy to know more about the origins, and I bet you do too, Kansas City. When have you encountered greed, Kansas City? And whether it was your own or somebody else's, what did it look like and how did you address it? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're going to come back for our second helping of the hour. We're so greedy for the discussion that we have to let it digest with a quick break. And welcome back to Central Standard. Today we're discussing why do some people have an excessive desire to possess more than they need. I'm joined by Dr. Bruce Lees, psychologist and professor of family medicine at KU. He's here live talking about greed. When have you encountered greed, Kansas City, whether it was your own or somebody else's? What did it look like? And what did you do to address it? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dr. Lees, have you ever successfully recognized and dealt with your own greedy feelings as we take the callers and have this larger discussion?
Oh, my gosh. I just got goosebumps. I love that question, and I will tell you why. I don't know how much background I need to give, but I did grow up in a poor environment financially, culturally in New York. Got to Kansas City for my residency at the medical center, at the VA medical center. And as soon as I started acquiring money, I started buying expensive shirts with little logos on them and getting them pressed and starched. And I actually owned my share of very expensive cars. This lasted for about 3 or 4 years. And then I took a volunteer position just to do it at Unity Temple on the plaza. And it was merely to apply my, much like I do here as a volunteer, to as a guest. And I did it for a year and a half. And somewhere in the middle of that, I walked out of Unity Temple, where most of the people I was serving were very disadvantaged and had really serious social problems. I walked out and I saw my very expensive, shiny, brand new black car in front of the church.
So, what was the moment that Dr. Bruce Lease got a new lease on?
Well, I looked at that car and I literally, not figuratively, I literally got in the car, drove to the place where I bought the car, and traded it in for an old car with lots of miles on it. And I never went back to starch shirts, never went back to labeled shirts, never went back. I just couldn't stand myself. And nothing else happened. There was no other big life event or disaster.
Let's go to Heather. Heather, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. I just wanted to ask your opinion on the connection between a person's ability or need to own and possess things and the draw to different political parties. I'm actually Mormon and probably like the only Democrat that I know who's LDS. And it's amazing to me how my friends at church are all unbelievably hardcore conservatives, and they believe so strongly in Christ and all this stuff, but practice politically nothing that he taught. And as wonderful as these people are, I've never seen, like, I can't believe the amount of need to possess things. That it seems like the Republican Party is much more interested in gaining. And it doesn't matter. I mean, like, Mitt Romney has $500 million. It just amazes me, like, the need to possess things. And it seems like the people who are interested more in material possessions and not as much in, you know, let the people below find their own way. Don't give to that. Don't give to this. Because you're not going to help them. You're just going to hinder them. And versus, you know, and they just want to possess things. They are drawn to the Republican Party. And this is a blanket statement from a Democrat, so I'm probably going to get, like, you guys are probably going to get some hate mail for this. But
well, Heather, let's let Dr. Lease address your issues on greed and political in the political process. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you so much. I have very, very, very strong interests in politics because they involve human behavior. And I grew up in a time, I will say that I'm 55 years old. I grew up in a time when there was not as much of a schism, to say the very least, between the parties. And there were people from both parties that were wealthy and owned a lot. And there were people from both parties that espoused more taxes. And then there were people from both parties that were very invested in social welfare programs. I miss that time. The polarization is really disturbing to me, and I am very passionate about the problems that you're describing. I have some numbers here. I didn't know that I was going to cite them, but let me flip my page here. Interesting statistics. The richest 1% of Americans now take home almost 24% of income. CEOs of the largest American companies earned an average of 42 times as much as the average worker in 80, but that was in 1980, 42 times more than the average worker. But now CEOs of the largest companies take home 531 times as much as the average worker. And then more than four-fifths of the total increase in American incomes went to the richest 1% between 1980 and 2005. Those numbers are part and parcel of this terrible split and schism that is so ugly and reflected in some of our politics today. So,
now, would you say, Dr. Lease, that based on those numbers, you know, it's obvious this just in, the rich are getting richer. But would you say also based on those numbers that it becomes, after the 1% gets into the 500 million and the billion and the, you know, eight summer vacation homes, that does it then become about greed for power?
Well, it all kind of blends together. I would say that power and money and authority and all those things are intricately tied. I am way more concerned about the gap, the disparity between those that have and those that don't have in our society. And I think that our politics reflect some of the anger that occurs inevitably when the fabric of society is compromised by that wide gap. So I hope that addresses Heather's question. I really, if I'm 100% honest, I won't comment on that because I don't know if it's true. I do know what my gut tells me, but I'm here on air, hopefully, to stick to the things I've studied.
What is it that you didn't want to comment on?
Well, I don't know if people who are Republicans have more or less. If you look at the absolute numbers of dollars that Republicans – now, if we're talking about politicians, boy, I can't comment on that either. I do know that I don't like the disparity. I don't like the gap between the rich and poor. I don't like that it's getting wider, and I know it's hurtful.
And I think what we learned and what Standard & Poor's has showed us, it doesn't matter who has the more money. What matters is that the routine tasks are not getting done because of political rancor. Well, how do you feel about that?
Well, that brings me to another concept that I was thinking about for today, and that's that institutions and governments and political parties and politics in our country have rules to combat greed. You know, in sports, you're not supposed to be on steroids. If you need money or want money, you're not supposed to steal it or assault anyone for it. In finance, you're not supposed to be Bernie Madoff.
Please don't be Bernie Madoff.
Yeah. And but in politics, we're supposed to have rules in place so that greed is curbed. And obviously, those rules and regulations are not fully effective.
Let's go to Mark. Mark, welcome to Central Standard. We don't have Mark, so let's talk about greed for other people's time, greed for non-monetary things, greed for attention.
Well, you asked me earlier about why people are greedy, and I can follow that question and move right into this one. To a large extent, people don't feel like they have enough because they're insecure about what they have or they feel that they will lose it. At extremes, that can be selfishness. It can also be just downright ignorance. So I don't know. Does that fit in? Does that start to lead?
Fear, ignorance, and selfishness, you've said, are some of the main tenets of greed, the negative tenets of greed. Would you like to expound on that and how those all come together for the bad type of greed?
Your question was about greed about time.
Mm-hmm. And attention.
People
and affection.
Exactly. It's been argued by wiser people than me that the drive to acquire a lot may be a function of being insecure about one's own worth as a human being. If I don't feel like I have great value just for who I am, whether I were – that was the advantage, by the way, you asked me earlier about my changes in life. When I was a kid, we were – to use the expression, we were poor as dirt. And so it never really occurred to me that money was necessary for happiness. I grew up in a home where my mother said, as long as we have love, we're rich. And when people don't learn that they have value and worth and basic goodness, they look to the material world to prove that to themselves.
And would you say with money, as in with time, with those we love and whose attention we covet, as with both of those things, does greed make nothing enough?
Oh, greed really ruins relationships. If I don't respect you and your needs, as if you were my neighbor,
right?
If you were my close friend, if if you were my wife, who you aren't, if I don't respect your needs and I put mine before yours, I will lose you. If you're healthy, you'll be gone. And I might then unfortunately turn to even more greed or narcissism to prove to myself that I'm okay.
Right, right. Cheryl from Liberty, welcome to Central Standard. We don't have Cheryl. Margaret writes in at Facebook. She says she would like you to talk about the issue of greed in nonprofits. Margaret says she sees greed in nonprofits at the level of senior management. They are paid reasonable salaries based on businesses of the same size, but those of us at the bottom are told that this is a nonprofit and we should not expect salaries that are equal to what we would be making in the business sector. Now, that's a very interesting point to bring up because it's easy to point to someone who has more than you and say that person's greedy. So can you expound on Margaret's nonprofit thing specifically and then get into that larger issue?
This is really a timely question, the one from Margaret here. I wasn't prepared to talk in any detail about this, so I'll give you sketchy facts and you can do your own research. In this Sunday's Journal World or Saturday's Journal World, there was an article about a not-for-profit that claimed to benefit people coming back from Iraq, soldiers coming back. And some, I think 3% of all of their take went to the people that they said they were benefiting, and the rest went to administrative fees and fundraising. That story stunk of greed. I know for a fact that not-for-profit 501c3 corporations vary hugely, and their true purposes for existing. There are 501c3s or not-for-profit organizations that are really out there to serve the public, and that's what they do. And then there are those where not only do they not serve as well as they could, but their executives take home a lot of money. So there's a lot of variability. It's like with politics.
And I always wonder sometimes, I go to a lot of benefits and black tie benefits and charity benefits, and I always wonder what the efficacy sometimes of some of the nonprofits who put on these big events would be and what percentage of that goes to where it says it goes.
It's a very important question. There are websites, there are organizations that merely monitor not-for-profit organizations. I would advise anyone who thinks they work in a greedy not-for-profit, I would urge them to look at the financial their financials carefully. I think that has to be public in a 501c3. And if you find that your hypothesis is confirmed, if you find out that what you think is true, I would look for a better nonprofit.
Charlene in Leawood, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, thank you. This whole discussion is focused on the greed of the wealthy. I think greed is found in all spectrums of the socioeconomic ladder. And you cited some statistics about taxes. What about the 51% of Americans who pay no federal income taxes? And also the 5% of Americans who pay 59% of the taxes. So it's very fashionable to bash the wealthy and the successful. But also, don't you think that some of the are there any non-deserving poor people who perhaps could be considered greedy?
Charlene brings up an interesting point. How much of this is haterism?
Well,
on the rich?
Charlene, thank you for your question. Fortunately, I have all my notes written out. I'm going to reread the note I read earlier, exactly the way I read it earlier. What I said was, when people don't pay their fair share of taxes, they're greedy. And when people take advantage of government benefits, they are greedy. So those were words I said earlier in the show, and I'm proud to repeat them again because I am just as concerned about people who take advantage of the system. I would be considered, you know, because I have several jobs and I teach and I have a doctorate, I would be considered probably among those that isn't poor. And I'm not ashamed of it, and I don't think anyone who works hard and makes money should be ashamed. And I happen to think that one of the most patriotic things I can do is pay taxes. So
Okay, what about giving to charities? The one woman who was saying Republicans are all for themselves. I do believe that Republicans tend to contribute more of their income to charities than do Democrats. So I think that the Republicans would rather pay less taxes, although we certainly pay our fair share, but would rather give to charity. And I think that's one of the things that we represent. So, but I appreciate it, and I'm glad you see both sides of the issue.
Oh, and thank you for calling in, Charlene.
Thank you.
And one more comment in response to what you're saying. Somebody I consider a very important friend in my life is not, I'm not going to say some of my best friends are Republicans. I'm going to say one of my favorite people is an organizer and an analyst for the Republican Party. He does a lot of campaigning. And when we sit and talk, the time goes by so fast that I don't even keep track of it. He's bright. He makes wonderful points. He cares about our country. I'm not saying I am not Republican or I'm not Democrat or I'm not independent or I am. I'm saying that if we're going to talk about specific parties, I can give you numerous examples of people of both parties that I am close with who really make a positive difference in this country.
Dr. Bruce Lease, you're a professor of family medicine and you deal a lot with cognitive behaviors and clinical issues. Ted from KCMO writes in to ask, is greed a disease? Is there a clinical diagnosis for disease?
Thank you for a lighter question, Ted. I'm smiling from ear to ear. You know, I work in a medical center. I've been teaching in a medical school for three decades now, and I'm really, really excited, even after all these years, about helping people with disease and illness and mental illness, et cetera. I still struggle with calling misbehavior a disease. I'm not saying that all greed is misbehavior, but I have trouble saying that anxiety is a disease. I have trouble saying depression's a disease. I'm not saying it isn't. So to label greed a disease at this point would probably not be being true to myself.
So there's no pill for greed per se, but is there a cure?
Oh, aha. With just, I think, 8 minutes, 5-6 minutes to go. I'm glad you asked me that. There are so many places where authors have written about the cure for greed. They don't say this is the cure for greed, but among the most famous popular authors in the country has been Stephen Covey, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. He is an incredible advocate of win-win outcomes, and he calls win-win as a frame of mind and heart that constantly seeks mutual benefit in all human interactions. So generosity or a win-win frame of mind and heart, that's a cure. Empathy, which is truly understanding how other people feel, that's a cure. That's understanding is empathy. Compassion is when you have empathy and you add caring to it. That's another cure. You look at the work of people like Jack Kornfield, who wrote the book A Path with Heart, who advocates generosity, and he calls it fearless compassion. That is absolutely a pill for becoming less greedy, and I could go on and on.
Dr. Lease, as you go on, you mentioned your personal epiphany about greed was based on the fact that you did some altruistic work for disadvantaged people. Franco wants to know, how do you think the natural tendency toward shame interacts greed?
Oh, I love that.
You came out and saw your shiny black car.
I want to repeat that. I had no idea you were going to ask me about that. So I'm very happy to answer questions about that. I was beside myself with shame. I walked out of this group that I worked with every single week, and I looked at that car and I said, "How dare you?" When people, and I know that that makes some people's skin crawl. Some people would say, "Well, you worked hard, you deserve it." For me, the discrepancy, given how I grew up, was so great that shame wasn't something I looked for. It just kind of came up. There I was. And to this day, I just feel better. Anybody who knows me, they laugh when they see me wearing anything but jeans and a T-shirt.
So is that a counteract for greed, as Franco asked and suggests?
I think shame? That shame – I don't like when people change – because of punishment. I prefer when people change because of a desire to be better people. And shame is a punishing feeling. It worked for me. I wouldn't want to shame anyone into being less greedy. I don't see that as an optimal way of helping people.
So just to reiterate, the cure is into looking outward. Is that the distilled point?
I couldn't have said it better. That's terrific, Jablani. The cure is to look inward and to say to yourself, when do I feel like I have enough? And when do I take the time to look outside of myself to make my community a better place?
Psychologically, emotionally, when do you know? What tools can we use to recognize enough is enough?
Humans have an incredible – one of the reasons I love psychology is that humans have an incredible capacity for telling themselves the truth. We don't always use that capacity, but we have an incredible capacity for that. Neil Clark Warren wrote a book called Finding Contentment, and he urges the reader over and over and over, every page, to pursue authenticity. And authenticity is being real with oneself, saying to oneself when oneself looks in the mirror, you know, am I who I say I am? Am I who I want to be? And those kinds of questions are vital.
So by that rationale, if you're happy with yourself, you're not going to want to be greedy for external things of validation.
Yeah, there's a fine balance between being focused on making sure the world is okay and making sure that you're okay. And people who are able to maintain that balance, they're greedy less often, let's just say, since all of us are greedy once in a while. And who isn't greedy when you taste that first morsel of your favorite food and then you feel like, I just can't get enough of this. It's so wonderful. I mean, greed is normal and just to a large extent.
Well, we know, Kansas City, that you're greedy for this conversation. It's been great. Dr. Bruce Leese is a psychologist and professor of family medicine at KU, and he was here live talking about greed. But I still want more. I still want more. I still want more. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Leese.
Thank you so much. I always enjoy being here.
Sorry we're out of time, but if you have an insatiable appetite for The Greed Show, you can find it in our other shows and archives, podcasts, blog, and a lot more at kcur.org. Click on Central Standard, and while you're there, sign up to receive our weekly newsletter to get up on upcoming programming. Tune in tomorrow for a conversation with local poet Stanley Banks. We'll hear how his short appeal on why the Missouri State Poet Laureate should come from Kansas City. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Up to Date is next. I'm Jablani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.